my relationship with barbed wire goes back a long way. Growing up along the creek and being a young boy with cousins and mates, and you're full of devilment, we'd always follow the creek along fishing and swimming. But where I come from out there, there's also watermelon patches and a vineyard. So, you know, being a young boys that get into mischief, you often raiding the vineyards and watermelons and running the gauntlet of farmers with shotguns and blasting at you. I don't think they were ever going to hit us, but then you're running away and you hear loud bangs going off, and it's quite... Once you made the safety of the creek, you always felt you were right, you know. You had the cover of the creek. But and I still talk to my cousins about it. The worst possible firearm is an old 303. You might be 400 yards away, so when that goes off, you hear the bang first, and then, you know, it seems like seconds later you hear this zoom, thunk, and a big cloud of clod would fly up, whereas high powerful rifles, you know, it all happens at the same time. So a 3-0, you'd hear the big bang and you'd be waiting for this hunk of lead to hit you. It never ever hit us, of course, but I think it's pretty scary thing to be running away from. But yeah, so there, my early memories of barbed wire was diving through fences like that, and I've got some body scarring from it. I've got many more since I've been using barbed wire. Using barbed wire in artwork, I've done a little bit of fencing over the years out in the bush, but to use it as a medium is quite a different thing. You still have to have a certain respect for the material, the medium you're using, because barbed wire is a thing like, it's a thing that if you grab it by the neck and you show it who's the boss, you don't often get hurt by it. It's only when you get a little bit tentative or something that you'll end up getting bitten by that. But you can, if you grab it properly, it won't bite you. So I've learned how to use barbed wire over the years. I use a pretty heavy gauge wire, it's a little bit more flexible, and I don't use gloves in that, so I'm able to manipulate it fairly well. There's a high tensile one, which is very fine, it's very, very sharp, and because it's high tensile, it doesn't bend really easy, so it's quite a dangerous barbed wire to use. And I can remember going into one of the jails one time to give a talk on my art, and I was talking to about 250 inmates. Some of them I'd known from football and other members of the community. So a few of them started firing questions after I'd given the talk, saying, "Well, I think the slideshow was 99% of my barbed wire stuff." And one of the inmates said, "Oh, Laurie, why don't you try and do something with that razor wire that we have outside all around the prison?" And it's just horrific stuff, you know. I just said, "No, I just wouldn't even touch that shit." You know, you cut your eye just looking at that. And you know, I see all the birds getting around with one leg, and it's just bloody terrible stuff, you know. It's probably become a bit of a signature medium with me because of the big barbed wire emus I've produced over the years. I've done a whole series of them since the early 90s, and they're all got, you know, they're all a little bit different. The heads, I start off by welding all the legs and the feet out of 22 mil Rio steel, which has got a texture just like emu legs. I build a frame, and then I tie the wire on. That's what gives the emu its shape, and is the way I bend and tie the wire on. Now, the head and about 30 centimetres of the neck is made from aluminium, cast aluminium, so that's attached. So I always use a newish sort of barbed wire, which is about the same intensity and colour as the aluminium head. So yeah, it's become a bit of a signature for my political piece. I only use barbed wire in political pieces. You know, I've built barbed wire canoes and all sorts of things like that. So it's just recently that I've got back in some illustrative stuff. First, I was drawing the emu heads quite large and treating them like family portraits on big canvases, because each one of them, they all got different personalities, and I can go to the Simia farm close to home and get lots of photos to work from. It's only just recently I've gone from there doing the pastel and paints portraits to doing these drawings for the show, and I thought, here's a chance to blow that wire up on a bigger scale so people can appreciate how it's woven. It's quite a clever little trick, the way they weave the barbed wire. You got two continuous strands that are twisted around, but there's two short pieces that are woven and interlocked, and that's what locks the barbs onto the continuous strands. So the particular wire I use has got a very clever little lock system on it, and I suppose I've got a little bit complacent with barbed wire from my early days, even to my art making practice, and I was thinking that people look at a 3D work sometimes and they take in the composition and everything else, but they don't always look closely at the medium. For instance, people can look at the barbed wire emus and go, oh yeah, that's barbed wire, but they don't actually study the barbed wire any further than that. So I thought, well, here's a chance for me to actually enlarge the barbed wire and draw it and show the clever, intricate sort of locking system on there. And I purposely used different colours just to get away from that cold galvanised look of the barbed wire. It's quite horrific sort of stuff to look at. So I guess I wanted to pretty it up a bit so people would look at it a little bit differently and actually get the opportunity to study it. Well, from the very first emu I produced, it was collaborative work with Michael Ether at the Experimental Art Foundation down in Adelaide. And that's when I produced the first barbed wire emu. I sort of produced it out of the very thing that kills emus. Emus aren't like kangaroos and wallabies when it tries to get through the fence. At least a kangaroo and a wallaby can either jump over or crawl under. An emu in drought time will just walk up and down the fence line for days at a time until finally they need to get through to the dam or the turkey's nest. And as they trip through the top two rows of wire and stumble through, it usually gets one leg caught as the wire twists over and it locks onto just above their foot. So, you know, they can hang there for another 2 or 3 days before they die. It's a bit like the old trick you see in the wrestling match where they used to twist the wrestler over and he'd be caught in the ropes. That's exactly what happens to the emus. Now, I walked along a line once out home, along a fence line, and there was 30-odd emus. You know, half of them were already dead. The other half were in the process of dying. And it was a fairly horrific thing to have to do, and I didn't have a rifle. I had to walk along with a stick and put all these birds out of their misery. And that's something that's really stuck with me. You know, that's our totem, you know, in my family, on my mother's side. So that was a very horrific thing to have to do. And I suppose from that day, barbed wire as a medium, I only use it on political pieces. I use it as a medium in political pieces. And when I say political, they could be environmental pieces. And everyone knows what barbed wire is, even people around the world. Barbed wire is used for all sorts of things. And I always say it's not only meant to keep cattle in, it's meant to keep native animals and Aboriginal people like myself off our own country, you know. And I've run the gauntlet of those farmers that they might have the deeds to the place, but, you know, to me that's still my country. I shouldn't have to run the gauntlet if I want to go fishing and hunting there, but that's the way things are. So I suppose from the very first emu, I only choose to use barbed wire on specific things, so yeah, mainly political works. I do other materials. I've done bronzes and other 2D works as well, but I think that barbed wire, like I said, it has become a bit of a signature piece on my political works, the big spiders that I do, big redback spiders, they're quite large, and the torso's about the size of a soccer ball. But those sort of political pieces are meant to, you put them on the wall. I call them Mama Widow by choice. Now, that's about women, whether they be black or white, making decisions on women's business. You know, I get pissed off when I think there's male politicians that might want to make decisions on what affects women. Those spiders, I suppose, you know, how they might deal with things like euthanasia or abortion. You know, I it doesn't matter what my view is on abortion. I think sometimes you do an artwork, you put it up on the wall and creates discussion. But that's the power of having a political piece there. I just think those sort of decisions should be left to women. Not that I have to fly the flag for women's rights, but I just think there's women's business and there's men's business. And there was no way in the world a male could ever know what it's like for a woman to have an abortion, I'm sure of that, for whatever reason. You know, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's just a decision we shouldn't be making. So, you know, it's become a fairly powerful forum, medium for me to use, and I do use it a bit sparingly. It's you know, like I said, not all my works are, I suppose, political. Coming from Queensland, some of us older ones grew up during the Joe era and things like that, and later on it was the Pauline Hansons, you know. So those sorts of things have always given us plenty of ammo to produce art. Some of those issues, they're in the newspaper all the time. I suppose when Pauline goes, I'll have to find someone else. Some of my art's been based around some of the things that Pauline's done and not done and tried to do. So I hope to. I've got a lot of footage of some video that I might do down the track. But I think the one thing that does bind us all together is we're all blackfellas and we're all from Queensland. And some of those political things that have happened over the years affected only us in Queensland. So I'm not sure where we're heading down the road with proper now, but on the horizon, I think there's shows overseas and things like that. So I'm just looking forward to continuing the relationship we have with each other. As, you know, I look around the art from the other six men, and I love all their art. I love all their attitude, their professionalism towards art, and that's rubbed off on me more. It's made me a better, I think, more professional at my practice and things like that.